Now, I'm going to take us to the end of this series today, and there's so much more where this came from. It's the beginning of a conversation. I hope that you guys have engaged this process as at least officially as I have. I have been so committed to trying to bring our church to something that takes what we've all thought, what we've all learned in certain ways, and go, can we look at this from a new perspective? That is a never-ending journey. Again, you should never stop seeking out what the scriptures have to say and why they say it and what they mean. It's just a never-ending process. And so if you missed some of this, here's a quick recap. Week one, we said, surprise, the future is here. That means that God's going to recreate this earth and recreate humans and put us all back in this place in a newly fashioned earth. He's going to bring heaven and earth together. So our future hope is not disembodied souls going up to this heavenly cloud and spending eternity there, but it's actually where he recreates this, he recreates us, and then we get to be here forever with him. And in week two, we said, surprise, we rest before the rest, because everybody wonders what happens if you die, and then your body's in the ground. Well, what's happening? You're obviously not there, so what's happening? And what the scriptures show us is that we're resting, we're at peace, we are with God, we're in a spiritual kind of realm, but if you will, that's not the ultimate goal. In fact, that's just kind of this pause that people are going through, but God's whole plan is for life to be holistic, and life as he defined it never really existed without bodies and the spirit together, and so that is life. And so the time where your body is dying is actually a time of death. It's a time that's not really part of what God ultimately has for people. He has, according to the scriptures, you totally refashioned, totally redone on this totally redone planet. And one day, if you place your faith in him, you'll get to experience that. And I'm going to unpack that further today. And last week, what we looked at is the cross, because the cross is one of those things that we constantly associate with oftentimes exclusively forgiveness. We look at the cross and we go, I'm a sinner, and so Jesus died on the cross to wipe away my sins. Theologically, it's this idea of substitutionary atonement, that God was so mad at me that he had to pay the penalty for me, and ultimately that's kind of the up and down of the cross. That's what it all is, but that's not even half of what the scriptures reveal the heart of the cross is. The heart of the cross is so much more than forgiveness. It's really about freedom, and sin is, according to the Old Testament in Genesis, is actually an obstacle that's on the backs of people, that's weighing them down, that's something that they have to jump over. Not unlike Jesus saying, in this life, you will have trouble. There are obstacles. When you sinned and you turned away from me, the world, it's almost like out of the ground, grew this like American Ninja Warrior thing. And it was like, you got to do this. You're going to have to do this. And you got to do it with the big old 20-pound vest on. And you're just going to have to do this. And ultimately, every person that goes down and through that gauntlet is going to struggle. But what Jesus came to do is not just to say, yeah, you sinners, you messed up. You did all this sinful stuff. And I got to wipe that away. He came to take that vest off, to clear that path so that you can move in freedom and live the life that God has called you to live. And so it's a much more beautiful picture of the cross. And again, that's a beginning. That's the step one into really unpacking what the cross means for all of us. And today what I want to talk about is the resurrection. Happy Easter. Like, this is Resurrection Sunday. And actually, as Christ followers, every single Sunday is Resurrection Sunday. In the church, there is kind of a hyper-emphasis on Christmas because it's celebratory and we love to like spend time getting presents. But really, as Christ followers and in the church, the real distinctive, the thing that sets us apart is the resurrection. It's what happened that strange Sunday morning or Easter morning when Jesus rose from the dead after dying. Many would-be messiahs were born. And there are birth stories, but none of them except for Jesus stayed alive or came back to life after they were dead. All of them died, and then they stayed dead, and then Jesus is the one that came back. And that's what makes him the Messiah. That's what makes him. Now, people didn't think the Messiah would die that way. People didn't think that that would happen. They thought there was resurrection, but not the end. But when Jesus died, after that gruesome, gorgeous cross scene, the people thought it was over. His followers thought it was over. They thought, well, if he was the Messiah and he's the king, that's all wrong. It's all wrong. It's all gone bad. There's no hope because he died. But the truth is, and what we know is that something happened a couple days later that started a sequence of events that brings us into this room today. No one can argue, historians, critical scholarships, no one can argue that something radical happened that day. There are many, many arguments for the historicity and kind of the proof that this man was actually dead and did raise from the dead, based on how the stories were told, based upon who the stories were told to, based upon the kind of movements that had echoes or just shadows of a Messiah-type figure and how they totally fizzled out. And here we are today because a man did a bunch of amazing things, but ultimately he said he was God, and then he died on a cross, and he rose from the dead. And that resurrection story is the beginning. It is the thing that makes us who we are as Christ followers. The resurrection. It's all about the resurrection. The New Testament says through Paul that without the resurrection, our faith is worthless. It is in vain. And so what it doesn't say that without the birth, our faith is worthless. It doesn't say that without the prophets, our faith is worthless. It doesn't say that without the creation story, our faith is worthless. Or without Noah's Ark, our faith is worthless. It says, as followers of Christ, there is one singular event that makes or breaks everything we do and why we do it, and that is the fact that a man who called himself Messiah died on a cross, and then 3 days later, something so radically strange and real happened. People believed they saw the man Jesus rose from the dead, and from that, they went, believed he was king, and they went all the way to the doorstep of the emperor of the world, the emperor of Rome, and they believed he wasn't king, but that Jesus was king. Now, no one does that, because what ultimately happened is they went and did that, and they died for it. This is one of the proofs of this thing. These men saw Jesus. These women saw Jesus. You can't walk up to someone who saw a man they knew, he was crucified and rose from the dead, and say, it didn't happen. And they go, yes, it did. And they go, you're going to die if you say he was the king. I don't know what to tell you. I saw him. The New Testament accounts are stories and retellings of men and women and people who engaged in a very real resurrection. And as a result of the resurrection, we have a church that celebrates Jesus. And so we have to take a moment to get re-engaged in this beautiful story. We have to take a moment to understand what it means. Now, in the New Testament, John, who was at the actual crucifixion scene and is called the Beloved, is probably one of the closest to Jesus. He was there, and he witnessed what Jesus went through. And as he kind of looks back on the life and the whole story of Jesus, he goes and retells it in the book of John, and he tells a story of what he saw, and he also tells a story of what it meant. And when you look in John chapter 1, what you see is him taking the whole creation story, the whole tabernacle story that all the Israelites went through, and mapping it over Genesis 1 into John chapter 1. And ultimately, what John is trying to do is to show you that the resurrection has some type of supernatural power-packed impact that should dominate all of our lives, the same way that creation does. The same way that you are here today because one moment in the course of all existence, the God of everything said, I'm going to make something. I'm going to create something. I just want to make something. Has anybody known an artist, like a real artist who just has moments where they just go, ooh, I got to go, and they run away, and they just paint stuff, or they make stuff, or they draw stuff, or maybe they do music, and they just go away. At one point in all of the vast existence of all life, the God of the universe went like this, I'm going to make something. I'm going to make something. And we start to see that in Genesis chapter 1. And what we see is that God said, I want to make this place. And he breathed in, and one day he made the heavens and the earth, and he split them apart, and then one day he added this piece, and one day he added this piece, and he's painting, he's creating, he's singing, he's making something with his words. And ultimately, then he says, I want to make someone, and he makes some people that look like him and act like him and talk like him and are designed to reflect back a relationship to him so they can walk with him and know him. And he makes all that, and he says it was very good. And ultimately, what John wants us to see is that that moment marked something that changed your life. You see, you wouldn't be here if God didn't want to make something. You wouldn't be here if God didn't create something. You wouldn't be here if he wasn't an artist, a creative being, a loving being with intention for your life. You wouldn't be alive. You wouldn't breathe. You wouldn't think. You wouldn't talk to people. You wouldn't go anywhere. You would not even have anything to think about because you wouldn't have been created. And you live in that. That's a grace that God has given us, whether we recognize it or not. All of us at some point in our life, we come face with death and the things that have been given to us that are free, but we were just born into, they become compromised and thankfulness elevates in our hearts. We start to go, ooh, this life is great. There's great, beautiful things. There's wonderful creation that I'm living around and that I am and I get to be. And what John wants you to think when he writes the story of Jesus' resurrection is he wants you to think that what God did is he spent 6 days in his workshop, and he created something beautiful, something that represents him, something that is a part of him, something that he can relate to, something that is masterfully made, something that every person would step back and go, how did he do that? And then he basically took a break, and he just took a little break, but while he was getting ready to do his next creation, he was doing some preparation. And I want you to see it that like he's in his workshop and he made a bunch of stuff and it was very good. And then right after he made it, it went wrong. And then he started to set the stage for his next work of creation. Kind of like if you're building a car and you make this first car and the car leaves the shop. And then you hear about it, and it got scratched, or it ran off the road, or it just gets old and it gets rusted. Then he goes, okay, I'm going to do something else. And he starts ordering parts on Amazon and going to Napa, and he starts building his workshop, and he gets a bigger garage, and he starts to do all this preparation. That's the nation of Israel. That's the story of the prophets. That's the story of the kings, as God is setting the stage for him to do something new, something that looks like the creation that the people saw originally. And then it says, and John wants us to know, he wants every Jewish reader, he wants every person on the planet as he is writing this story so that the world would know that Jesus is God. He wants, on the day of Jesus' resurrection, every person to know that now God is up to something again like he was in Genesis chapter 1. Look what it says in John. It says, early, when? On the first day of the week. You see how easily we skip over stuff? We think that the author is just telling us when it happened. He's not telling us when it happened. He's telling us what is happening. He's saying, on the first day of the week. Oh, do you get that? Go back to Genesis. On the first day. See, God is now doing new creation. He's doing new creation. You see, when Jesus died, his dead body went into the ground, and between that time and the resurrection, early that morning, while it was probably still dark, the master went back into the shop, and he started to move, and he turned on the heat, and he got things moving, and he started to set up his table, and he started to create something new. And in his creative prowess, in his masterful ability, the Son of God, dead, brutally murdered, tortured, in the ground, in a stone, behind a stone, he was created into new life. And it was good. And you see, God, with the resurrection, he's restarting the creative process. He's like going back at it. He's like, oh, now the first day of the week. So I had this whole time, and then I took a little break, and I got ready, and now I'm gonna get back at creating. I'm going to get back at making, and my first move is to do something new with me, and with me as you, and with the human and God experience coming together in Jesus. You see, on the first day of the week, Jesus did something new, and what that means is it's going to happen to you. Because the scriptures say that Jesus' resurrection is the beginning of a new creation. a new, masterful approach to God's design as he takes people who die and they go into the ground. And every one of us, when our bodies go into the ground, God is going to recreate and he is going to resurrect every person in Christ. That's our hope. I mean, if that doesn't start to get you excited, we believe that God made this. Do we believe God can remake this? You see, people ask, well, what's my body going to be like? Right? Don't you wonder, well, if I'm going to be resurrected, do I get like an upgrade? Do I get like a what? How's this work? And that's a question that actually in the first century that they were asking and Paul answers. Paul answers, they're asking this question. They're going like, what is the body going to be like in resurrection? And there's this argument in 1 Corinthians or in the Corinthian church that there's no resurrection. And Paul's like, if you don't believe that there's a resurrection, man, like you are missing this whole thing. And people are saying there's no resurrection of people. And he's going, well, if Jesus rose from the dead, then that means he's the first fruits. And ultimately, the picture of what your body will be like, and this should start to give you hope and drive everything about your Christian faith, is like a waterfall. You see, what God has done is he's made you in this form. You know that you and me, that every 7 years we become different people. You know that our biological makeup, our molecules and stuff, every 7 years because of, you know, this process of our body changing and molecules dying, that every 7 years we're completely new. It kind of puts a little different spin on, like, you know, I'm not the same guy I was back then. That's the truth, right? We're all not the same. Like, what's happening physically with our bodies is we're recreating all the time. And it's kind of like a waterfall. You see, where you go down and the form is the same, but the matter changes. And ultimately, the picture of your future resurrection is that the waterfall is moving, but in that waterfall is tainted. It's toxic. There's some toxicity in that beautiful form, in that shape. And when God recreates, what he's going to do is he's going to keep that form, but he's going to pull out all the toxicity, and you are going to be fully flowing. And he's going to take those molecules, and if he's making you new right now, imagine what he can do when he just takes you and starts all over. You will have different matter, but you will be you. And you see, ultimately, you have to go through this process. Because what Paul says in 1 Corinthians is that right now, you have to die. You see, the picture of resurrection is even Jesus is he's likened unto a seed that goes into the ground. And unless a seed goes into the ground and dies, then it can't what? It can't become what it's designed to become. And you and I were born as a seed, but we are designed to be a flower. We're designed to become this blossom that God, it's all in there, the genetics, it's all there, and God's going to rid the bad and finish the good, and he's going to take all that it is and recreate it. Your body now is a seed. Your future body will be a flower. It will be everything it's supposed to be and more. The people in the Corinthian church, they were asking this question. Look how Paul beautifully answers. So will it be with the resurrection of the dead. Your body is the question. The body that is sown is perishable. It is raised imperishable. What are the differences? It's going to raise imperishable. You're going to raise indestructible. Wow, that's so cool. I mean, that is like the coolest thing, right? Like, just stop for a second. You're going to be indestructible. What? Huh? That's like superhero talk, man. Like, that's like Thanos. So we all die Spider-Man and we wake up Thanos. That's amazing. I'm sorry you don't know the Marvel Universe. It is sown in dishonor. It is raised in glory. What? You mean that even now at our best, we don't do justice to the beauty of God? And that when we are resurrected, we'll be us, but we will fully represent him? Wow. That's so cool. We need to get back to like what it's like to be like on the playground with our friends. Oh, you got new shoes? That's so cool. The resurrection is so cool. You come out a different person. It is sown in weakness. It will be raised in power. What? Are you telling me that even in all my strength that I'm weak compared to what I'm going to be in the resurrection? That's so cool. Everybody say, that's so cool. That is so stinking awesome that that's what God has for us. Wow. I've never even read this before. I'm just reading it for the first time. It is sown as a natural body. It is raised as a spiritual body. A spiritual body. Still a body. Wow. Now you get the picture, right? Jesus raises from the dead. They don't quite recognize him, but it's him. He has his scars, but his scars are there to tell stories. It's him. It's really him. It's just the total remade him. That's the resurrection, my friends. And God did something new, and that's going to happen to you, and that's going to happen to me. You see, when we grasp on to what God has promised us, to the gift that God has given us, to the future hope that God has laid out for us, when we grasp on to that, it is rattling. It changes you. It rocks you to your core. Because when you believe that no matter how bad things get, there's a total reconstructed future that's as beautiful as anything you've ever seen times a million. You can endure whatever the pain is. You can endure the middle. You can endure the brokenness. You can understand the promise. You can grab on to what God has laid before you. And when we wrap our brains around the resurrection, it should, in fact, become part of the conversation that we live out. The way we think, the way we should want. I'll put it this way. We should not be like salesmen where all we want to do is just get people to the resurrection and just sign and seal the deal. But we should, in every interaction we have, want to make that a centerpiece of the relationship. It doesn't have to be all of it. It doesn't have to be where it starts. It doesn't even have to be necessarily where it ends. But when we follow Christ, the thing that moves us into the relationship with Christ is the thing that should move us into the relationship with the world. It should be the center focal point, the desire. How could, if you believe this is true, how could you not want to engage the world around this hope? This is wonderful. That's the story. And then on the first day of the week, look what God did. He made something new, and it includes you. What? It's so cool. This is so amazing. This is so wonderful. This is so refreshing. This is so life-giving. For Christ followers, the resurrection should be the driving force in every human interaction that we have. And what I want to do is I want to take all of this and I want to give you a landing spot for this series. Just somewhere to land, just something to grab onto. And some of you are going to hear this and go, whoop, that's Joel. This is where he always goes. And it's not because it's where I always go. It's because I think it's where it always goes. Oh, you can kind of six one way, half a dozen the other, you know, whatever. However you want to say it, chicken and egg, whatever. I think this is where it always goes. And the more I look deeply into the theology of the resurrection, the more what God showed me at first in simplicity, he shows me continually through complexity. He continues to show me that there's a pattern that we're all supposed to be living. There's a life we're all supposed to be living, and that the driving fuel is this resurrection story that's a hope for me, it's a hope for you, it's a hope for the world. And ultimately, it's told in a story that the authors of the New Testament, Luke specifically, you've read this story before and you think that it's just a narrative. One of the things we have to get away from with the scriptures is to think that it's just telling the story, because authors were intentionally doing things. They have things to say. And it doesn't mean that it's not just a story, but sometimes they pick the stories, right? I mean, they're picking what they want to say. They're picking the parts. There's so much going on that the authors are picking what they want to say. And in Luke, the author who studied the life of Christ after the whole kind of craziness happened in the life of Christ, he studied it and he wanted to make sure people understood what happened. So he picked, he heard lots of stories. This made it into the final edit. This right here. And most of us read the story of what happened miraculously with Jesus on that road to Emmaus, but I want you to start to see it very, very differently, because it doesn't just tell us what happened, it tells us what happens. It tells us what happens. I'm gonna read a story. We're all just gonna read it together, and then we're gonna close with a little conversation. Now that same day, day of the resurrection, two of them were going to a village called Emmaus, about 7 miles from Jerusalem. They were talking with each other about everything that had happened. As they talked and discussed these things with each other, Jesus himself came up and walked along with them, but they were kept from recognizing him. He asked them, "What are you discussing together as you walk along?" They stood still, their faces downcast. One of them, named Cleopas, said, "Are you the only one visiting Jerusalem who does not know the things that have happened there in these days?" "What things?" I mean, talk about the epitome of playing dumb. He asked. "About Jesus of Nazareth," they replied. "He was a prophet, powerful in word and deed before God and all the people. The chief priests and our rulers handed him over to be sentenced to death, and they crucified him." Every other Messiah story stopped right there. "But we had hoped that he was the one who was going to redeem Israel. We hoped he was the Messiah. We were waiting. And what is more, it is the third day since all this took place. In addition, some of our women amazed us. They went to the tomb early this morning but didn't find his body. They came and told us that they had seen a vision of angels who said he was alive. Then some of our companions went to the tomb and found it just as the women had said, but they did not see Jesus." He said to them, "How foolish you are, and how slow to believe all that the prophets have spoken. Did not the Messiah have to suffer these things and then enter in his glory?" And beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he explained to them what was said in all the scriptures concerning himself. As they approached the village to which they were going, Jesus continued on as if he were going farther. But they urged him strongly, "Stay with us, for it is nearly evening. The day is almost over." So he went in to stay with them. When he was at the table with them, he took bread, gave thanks, broke it, and began to give it to them. Then their eyes were opened, and they recognized him, and he disappeared from their sight. They asked each other, "Were not our hearts burning within us while he talked with us on the road and opened the scriptures to us?" We knew something was weird. They got up and returned at once 7 miles. They ran back. There they found the 11 and those with them assembled together and saying, "It is true. The Lord has risen and has appeared to Simon." Then the two told what had happened on the way and how Jesus was recognized by them when he broke the bread. You see, this is not just a beautiful story, as beautiful as it is, as wonderful as the story we just read is. It has a direction for every one of us, because what the author is trying to say is that this picture of the walk to Emmaus, this is the thing that we should see happening over and over and over and over and over and over again in all of our lives. Two men walking, having a conversation. Jesus shows up in the middle of the conversation. There's interactions about the scriptures. There's conversations about the Messiah. This is not just, "This is what happened." This is, "Here's what should happen." This is what God wants all of us to do. He wants us to live this invitational life where we have relationships with people, and the conversation as we walk always becomes about Jesus. Somewhere on the 7-mile journey. Somewhere the conversation turns to Jesus. Somewhere there's a question of the resurrection. Every one of us is called to build relationships with this as the journey. And then every single time it turns to, look what these men experienced. Jesus went with them. Then they questioned whether he should stay and he was going to go on. They were burdened. Come back in. Be a part of this. It's such a beautiful picture of what happens when the people of God love people they're walking with. They invite them in. Don't leave. If you are Jesus to somebody, they will never ask you to leave their life. So we walk with people. We talk with people. We are invited into their lives. And when we sit with them, God does something through the breaking of bread, through having a meal that causes realization. There's a relationship. There's a conversation. It's a 7-mile journey. It's lots of time sometimes. But eventually, the scales fall from people's eyes and they realize that this resurrection story is in fact true. And from that moment, when the resurrection is fully realized, it moves to a revolution. For every person that comes face to face with the reality that a man died, called himself God, and was beautifully risen from the dead as the king of this planet and of all creation, it does nothing short of a revolution in your life. These men see the story. They just did a 7-mile journey. They run back. Then they tell others. Then they go on a lifetime mission of making their life what they just experienced. Walking, talking, revolution. You want to know the keys to this? Walk with people, talk with people, eat, 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 eat. Keep on eating, keep on meeting, keep on talking, keep on walking. What happened on the road to Emmaus with Jesus is what will happen when you do the same. Who are you inviting into your life? What is your problem? You don't know the story. You don't believe it's true. You cannot face the story of the resurrection and not have it provoke a revolution in your life if you believe it's true. All you gotta do is walk and talk and eat. You're gonna do that anyway. Do it with people who need Jesus. Do it with people who are suffering. Move into different spaces. Walk, talk, eat, eat, eat. And watch lives get changed. The way is better than we thought. Surprise, my friends, it's still all about relationships. A God who created a being who he wants to have a relationship with, who he wants to restore the brokenness with, that we can love each other and love God and be his children. Let's take a minute and pray. Father, I thank you so much for this surprise. I thank you so much. We thought we knew, we thought we understood, we thought we grasped the wholeness, the depth, the gravity of the resurrection. God, truth is, we're just beginning. We're just beginning to peer back, to pull back the veil, to look into the marvelous story of your resurrection. God, I pray that it would be something in our lives today that we have a moment with, that we stand, that we look at, that we have almost a confrontation with. And if there's anybody in here that doesn't know Jesus, give your life to Jesus right now. He's your hope, your only hope. God, we thank you so much for changing the way we see the world, for changing the way we see you. We ask you to continue to bless this place as we continue to pursue who you are and what you've done for us. In Jesus' name.